Welcome to Odd Week Podcast. This is, Keith, I believe this is episode 3 now, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. 3 or 28.
So we're already well beyond most PHP podcasts, so we're going strong. I'm joined tonight by Keith Casey, who is always, as always, my unindicted co-conspirator. Say hi, Keith.
Hi, Keith.
You snowed in up there tonight?
Actually, yeah. We've got, 2.5 feet on the ground from the winter storm this weekend in D.C., and then it's coming down heavily now. We're supposed to get, like, another foot tonight, I think. That's 30 centimeters for people not in the U.S.
And we're joined tonight by our special guest, Nate Abele.
Hey, you got it right.
Awesome. Say hi, Nate.
Hi, Nate. And Cal and Keith.
Now, Nate, where are you located?
I'm located in beautiful New York City.
Oh, okay.
Where we got an amount of snow that can probably be measured in millimeters.
Oh, wow. Geez, Nashville got more.
Stuck on that.
We got a nice little dusting here today, although looking out the window, it's kind of all died now. Anyhow, our topic for tonight is starting open source projects. Nate, you know just a little bit about this topic because you've worked on Cake for a while and you just started your own project.
Wait, what topic?
Starting open source projects.
Sorry, bad joke.
And with that, I will turn it over to Keith. Take her away, Keith.
All right, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about you're a PHP developer, obviously. How long have you been doing PHP? How long have you been active in the community?
How long have I been doing PHP since, I think, 2004? Let's see. It's 2010 right now. Yeah, 2004 sounds about right. Okay. So actually not that long in the grand scheme of things.
It's about when I started. So yeah, that's not long at all. So how long have you been involved in the community? Did you jump in right immediately or?
Well, as far as participating in other open source projects in general?
Yeah.
I think, early 2005 was when I started contributing to CakePHP, which was, pretty much right out of the gate. The project had been going for, a couple of months when I jumped on board. So yeah, I figured, it was an interesting project and something that I would probably be basing my career on. So I figured, I'd better get involved and at the least try and steer the direction in my favor.
So at that point, were you using it on a day-to-day basis, or did you just happen to find it and thought it was interesting?
Well, I think as with most PHP developers, we kind of saw the Rails thing, and I was fairly new to PHP, so I knew nothing of the framework scene, what little there was of one at the time. So I thought, surely there must be something like this available for PHP, and after looking around, the conclusion was, yeah, not so much. So Cake was kind of the furthest along at that point. So I thought, okay, I've got this app to start to work. I might as well jump on board and start using it. So I'd come from, as every other PHP developer ever, writing my own framework, as soon as I started with the language. But as soon as I found Cake, I dropped that pretty quickly.
Mandatory to be a PHP developer. You have to write your own framework at some point.
Absolutely.
At least once.
You delete it.
At least once.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a good PHP developer, you usually delete it.
I think it was Liz Smith that said every PHP developer needs to write their own framework at least once, but never use it.
Yes. And I think it was Luke Welling who said there are 2.3 frameworks per PHP developer.
Absolutely.
That's all?
Which you need, right? Yeah, that's
definitely
all. That still leaves you with a lot.
Yeah, well, we have choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indecision is the key to flexibility.
Wow. If you learn nothing else tonight, audience, learn that right there. So what did the team look like then? Was it just you and a couple guys in the basement or what?
Actually, no. I was one of about 12 to 15 different developers working on different aspects of the framework, documentation, community support, that kind of thing. So it caught on pretty quickly, but as the months kind of rolled on over the summer, most people were kind of dormant or just kind of fell off the face of the earth. So by the end of that, it was really only about six guys who were, including myself, who were like core people. Go ahead.
So 12 people is huge. I mean, I can think of very few open source projects that have like a half dozen, let alone a full dozen. Were the roles segmented or anything? I mean, do you have somebody working on database, somebody working on UI, somebody working on just cleaning up after other people?
Initially, yes. We always had one dedicated documentation person, John Anderson, who has done a phenomenal job for 5 years now on CakePHP, well, continuing on CakePHP and now on Lithium. As far as developer segmentation, there wasn't really anyone responsible for kind of cleaning up after everyone else, but the components of the framework were somewhat segmented. I mean, everybody did a little bit of everything, but for major components, there were kind of one or two owners, so to speak.
So you talked about, I'm sorry, I don't remember the guy's name that went on to start with documentation on Cake and went on to Lithium. So is Lithium a fork of CakePHP?
So it's not really. I mean, most people consider it a fork because it sort of incubated or was incubated in the CakePHP project. But really, I think of it more as a successor. In terms of code base, Lithium and Cake really only share about three classes. And of those, two are fairly heavily modified. Lithium was basically the culmination of everything we, as a team, kind of learned over 5 years that we had been developing Cake. And it actually started as just me kind of hacking around on 5.3 beta, just to kind of mess around and see what could be done. And after a while, that collection of scripts grew into a little framework and then a bigger framework, and then what we have now.
You mean PHP 5.3, correct? Not Cake 5.3 or anything?
Right, PHP 5.3 when it was still in beta.
So at that point, it was you hacking around with some stuff, learning some things, and sounds like at least a couple people from Cake joined you? How much of the team sort of split with you?
Well, let's see. I don't have a solid number in front of me. I would say the majority. Let's see, I can give you a quick count.
A brown number is perfectly acceptable.
A dozen, let's say. Some of them were kind of dormant in Cake for a while, but then when Lithium popped up on the scene, it's a new code base, they got interested again, which was nice.
So you started off with a sort of a core community that was really interested and motivated on the project, it sounds like.
Right, which kind of puts us in an interesting category of open source projects, because I wouldn't recommend starting from zero with any PHP framework right now, because, I mean, everybody and their brother has one, as we just discussed. But obviously we are in a little bit of a unique situation where, you know, we have this existing code base. It's kind of got some familiar conventions and organization, but it's all new, taking advantage of PHP 5.3 features. So, yeah, we did have that built-in community to start, which was extremely valuable.
So when you said about a dozen people went over and joined, how did you keep people moving and coordinated at that point? Was everyone sort of unified by a common vision or something else?
Believe it or not, we actually found a use for Google Wave. A lot of the initial planning and everything kind of came down to a Google Doc document and kind of Google Wave as soon as we could, you know, gather up enough invites.
Well, that's so one use I've heard of it.
Right, right.
One out of 50 million, 100 million?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just wrote up some documents of kind of what my vision was for the project, and everybody kind of contributed their thoughts and ideas, and we just voted on stuff. And in general, it really helped that everyone on the project kind of had their own ideas and interests as far as what they want, where they wanted to contribute within the project. Like some guys are really passionate about community support. John, as I mentioned, is, you know, is really, really passionate about documentation. He doesn't consider code feature complete until he can present a document to a user and that will make them understand how to use it.
So, gotta love that man's commitment.
Yeah, having people like that to work with has been extremely valuable and rewarding.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So I assume you've moved past the Google Doc at this point, right?
Right now we actually have our very own wiki.
Wow.
I know.
That's like multiple Google Docs.
Right.
That's like two or three Google Docs, right?
At least.
Wow. So how do you keep it? Do you use wiki for everything? I mean, is that where you do the voting? Is that where you document everything?
As far as on a long-term basis, yeah, any decisions that go into the project are either battled out in a ticket or on the wiki. A lot of voting we do in IRC. If it's really something important where it's kind of goes to the entire team, which spans many, many time zones, then we'll do something on a wiki, or again, Google Wave is used occasionally.
Let me ask you about the voting or the structure of the team. Do you have one vision keeper for the project, or is everybody the keeper of their particular piece of the vision?
Well, I have kind of an overarching vision for the entire project, and it gets more detailed when it gets into like APIs and class organization and that kind of thing. But in that initial document, I laid out my kind of vision for, documentation, how the community should be organized, all that kind of stuff. But then I left things like, marketing and branding completely up in the air. And we have a designer, John Adams, out in Santa Cruz, who just kind of took the design piece and just ran with it. Garrett Woodworth, who does all our project management, has really thrown in his ideas and philosophies on how communities should be organized and everything like that. He's kind of like the central dispatch for really the entire project.
So for the technical, you're the vision keeper, but for like the community and the marketing, you've got people that own their piece of it. Is what you're saying,
right?
Okay,
right.
Because everybody knows you're a very meek and mild person. So to see you be the vision keeper and have to stand up and have a strong opinion, I can't
it's
see
so,
it.
So weird. Yeah, it's just I'm just the most humble guy that I know, really.
You're the humblest person in the world.
And he's very proud of it.
Exactly.
Indeed.
So it sounds like the different roles are pretty segmented. Did you manage to did you go out and specifically recruit people for those positions, or did they just sort of fall into place?
A few people who I knew would be really interested in one particular topic. Yeah, I didn't really have to say so because it was just kind of they just kind of defaulted to that. Like John Adams is a designer, so obviously he's really going to care about doing the identity and branding and that kind of thing. John Anderson is a really good documenter and very passionate about that. So that's his kind of natural fit. Everybody just sort of almost fell into place. And we have a lot of Johns.
Oh, which that's is convenient. So you've got like one John in each group?
Almost.
You have like a designated John? Okay. Sounds
What's that?
Really bad, doesn't it? Nothing. Don't mind me. So,
yeah,
so how big is the team now, headcount-wise?
How big is the team? Good question. The team has grown by exactly one since we started. Will Sinclair, formerly of the Zend Framework project, he created his own kind of category, which is like networking, I guess. Networking with people, not with machines.
I saw that he had posted something or set up a website, and Lithium had a presence there, and it looked like kind of like a generic, kind of like GitHub, but not not repository related or anything. And I saw that he had that out there, and I was wondering if he was just setting that up and volunteering you guys to be a part of it, or if he had actually joined Lithium. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the most interesting aspects of this project for me has been the attention that it has received and the number of different people who are interested in it. Just people from all over the PHP community, people you would not expect to want to have any association with a framework. And I'm not going to name names or anything because they might not want me to. They might be embarrassed. But that's been very interesting.
Actually, I'd like to take a sidebar for a second. Cal, did you say like GitHub but not a repository?
Yeah, why? Did I say that wrong?
No, just wondering what that means.
Well, no, GitHub is based around Git, which is not – it's not a repository, I know, but it's a source code control. I misspoke. You're right. It's not a repository, but it's centered around Git, whereas this new project that Will set up did not seem to be centered around anything like Git, but it had some very similar features to it. So I was just kind of wondering, you know, if he was part of Lithium and or if he was just, you know, slamming them into the project. Not that Will would do that, but, you know, I didn't know he was part of the project.
No, he's definitely part of the project. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but if you had a URL or something you could point me at, I could tell you. We do have, as part of kind of our community, Garrett took a month of his copious spare time and wrote an application called the CHA, which is similar to GitHub, except it's open source, so you can go download it and run it yourself. It supports Git and Subversion, as well as, you know, a bunch of other things. So that's what we run all our projects off of.
That sounds pretty interesting. So it sounds like the target market, the people you're looking to reach out for are primarily developers, right? I mean, not end users.
Right.
That's the URL. So yeah, yep. I mean, somebody looking to use Lithium is probably not the person looking to do a one-click install of WordPress. Completely different segments.
Right. I mean, this is fully 100% a web application framework. There is nothing CMS or bloggy like in the package when you download it. It's just code. So.
Yeah, and it's specifically for developers. It's not for end users per se.
Yes, it's for developers.
Right. I just always try and throw that out because some people are like, oh, well, you know, they don't really know what they're getting into when they play with an application or they look around a community. And
right.
Somebody that doesn't have a background in development that's looking at Lithium would say, what the hell is this? And, you know,
yeah,
might be scared away. They might, you know.
We're not – and that's actually a really good point. And it's something we ran into with Cake, which kind of caused a lot of support headaches, I guess, because there was this mismatch between what the people providing support were expecting and what the people kind of discovering the project were expecting. We got a lot of people who were basically expecting it to be a one-click install CMS, and that's obviously not what it does. So with Lithium, we don't really try and scare people away, but we do make it very clear through, you know, how we present ourselves, how we document things, how we the installation tutorial. We do make it very clear that this is not a beginner's framework. Obviously, with PHP 5.3, that kind of automatically cuts down on people who would use shared hosting for their weekend project. Like, this is for fairly serious developers.
That's great, and that's an important distinction that a lot of people end up missing.
Right.
And on the DC PHP list recently, somebody mentioned using Cake PHP or Drupal, and I said, what?
Yeah.
That doesn't make a lot of sense. There's a big gap there.
Right. It's kind of like, do you want to use a car or a tree? Well, what are you doing? If you want to plant a garden, use a tree. If you want to drive somewhere, use a car.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned a couple minutes ago about Will. Will Sinclair's been sort of like a networking guy and everything like that. And you also mentioned that you've
you've really gotten some interest from interesting places. How did you get the word out? You launched, what, right around ZenCon this year, correct?
Yeah, actually, a few days after ZenCon, I kind of dropped a few hints in a talk that I gave at ZenCon, kind of right at the end, dropped in the URL. So when I posted the slides, people kind of saw it that way. And then we just kind of started talking about it, started sent messages out to the community, being like, hey, what's up? I think I was on another podcast with Marco back a while ago. So yeah, just kind of spreading the word whatever way we could.
Do you have anybody like blogging on your behalf, doing anything along those lines?
We have a blog within the wiki, but I mean, outside of just us as a team, not really. If you want to start blogging about us, that would be great. I will take that as a suggestion that you would like to do that and follow up with you after the podcast. You see what you get for asking questions?
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, my next question was, I'll say this verbatim, how could someone help with the project right now?
Well, how could someone help with the project right now? Oh, let me count the ways. No, we're actually we're still in I don't know, not release mode yet. We're getting ready to release 0.6 on Monday, which is production stable for my purposes, maybe not yours. Seriously though, we all the code is really well tested and it's actually used by a not small number of people at this point. But all my production applications for the past, I guess a year now, have been on predominantly on Lithium. But as far as how people could help, documentation's always a really big one. We're trying this new thing where documentation is all in wiki files or API docs. And the way that works out is interesting because we have a little plugin that's an actual live documentation tool. So as you're editing your doc block, you can actually browse around your application and read it like a reference manual. So helping out with documenting the APIs or writing tutorials is a really easy way to get started and get familiar with the framework. And one of the things we're experimenting with within that documentation plugin is actually a kind of a wiki macro syntax for embedding code, which allows us to do some interesting things. Like, let's say you're documenting a method. You can actually embed code from the unit test for that method right in the documentation. So your kind of test code doubles as explaining code when you're documenting it, which is great because then the next step that we're going to be taking in this documentation tool is actually hashing that code that gets embedded into your documentation. So every time your unit tests change, you get a little notification that you need to review your documentation.
Oh, wow. So it's self-updating, self-notifying. That's pretty nifty.
Right. So, and that's another thing about the project is we've kind of come up with a lot of different creative ways to buy efficiencies in developing this thing because initially it was just me kind of by myself. So just being able to start completely from scratch and use kind of all new stuff has been a great way to sort of take what we've learned and figure out, okay, we can do this a little bit better.
So what is the sort of the biggest lesson you learned about building an open source project that you're really trying to drive home in Lithium?
Ooh, wow. Yeah, I don't know if I could pick one.
Yeah, a little question.
Yeah.
Easy one. Well, top 28 then.
Top 28. All right, that I can do. Community, obviously very, very important. Getting people excited, I think, is really a big one. Actually, the best thing that I could probably say about any endeavor that you're trying to get people to do what you want to do with or without paying them, the best thing that you can possibly do is play to the efficiencies of human nature. And that plays out in a lot of ways, but
what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm sorry?
What do you mean by that?
As far as I've seen some open source projects where, you know, as soon as, especially if they're new, as soon as anyone takes an interest, like start, you know, trying to like coerce them into contributing right away, even if they're just kind of checking out the project and, you know, seeing if it's right for them, which is kind of a turnoff because you're like, well, step off. I don't even know if I want to use your project. Why are you trying to get me to contribute? So there's that. There's people who try and like maintain support channels where people will kind of roll over for the help vampires, which is not so good because then that tends to devolve a community very quickly. People who are there to just like have other people solve their problems for them. So catering to that is really, really bad news.
I'm learning all kind of new terms here.
I don't know if there's I know I have more examples. I'm kind of struggling to think about them right now, but getting people, I guess maybe a better way to put it would be getting people to do what you want in a way that they want, in a way that kind of they're getting something out of it too. Like when I was talking about initially when we set up the project, if I demanded, you know, absolute authoritarian control over every aspect of the project, no one would want to work with me. But so instead, I kind of laid out a few, you know, very malleable visions for how I wanted things to be and said, hey, guys, take this and go run with it. So giving other people ownership of the project or parts of it are hugely valuable in getting people to kind of want to contribute and want to spend their free time writing code instead of, you know, drinking beer or hanging out with their wife / girlfriend.
I think you just answered the question I was about to ask, which was how do you motivate people since you're not paying them? So what I'm reading or what I'm hearing you saying is that giving somebody ownership of a piece of the code or the piece of the project and saying, this is yours, you are responsible, that is a motivational factor for them.
It is a motivational factor for a lot of people, not everybody. Actually, I gave a whole talk on this about basically how the things that, and I'm probably going to get in trouble here, about how the things that motivate people to contribute to open source projects are actually almost completely analogous to the things that motivate people to commit treason, which are money, ideology, revenge, and ego.
Keith, call the FBI.
Anyway,
that's actually a really good point. I hadn't considered that one. That's a really good one.
I'm making a note here.
Well, so, but it sounds like it's more than just sort of motivating them, giving them something to sort of sink their teeth into and be theirs. It sounds like it's also of setting a destination, letting them know that they're moving towards something. They're not just going off on their own in their own direction. It sounds like there's sort of, for lack of a better term, some sort of framework around them towards that goal.
Right. I mean, one thing that's definitely a killer is if I were to kind of hand over control of a piece of project to someone and then kind of just use that as an excuse to start slacking off, basically. You know, as the lead developer of the project, it is my responsibility to set an example for everyone else of what the expectations are.
Yeah, because if you're just going to tell somebody to do something and then start slacking off, you're not the lead developer, you're the project manager. As long as you understand your role, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, even the project manager, actually, in our case, the project manager works, I would say, harder than anyone else on the project, including me. Not by a huge margin, but, you know, we'll just leave it at that.
Wow, just killed that joke, didn't you?
Wow. Yeah.
I try.
So let's flip this whole thing around. You talked about some of the things that were good that you're glad you did and that helped your project. What about things that you think have hurt your project or things that you wish you'd done differently? I mean, I know you've only been around for 3 or 4 months publicly, but there still has to be at least one thing.
Lithium specifically?
Well, in general, you can withhold names if you want.
One thing I would say is because we were, you know, quote unquote, forked from CakePHP, everyone was kind of looking to the two communities to you know, see the action, see the fight. And I guess we did a lot to diffuse that, but maybe we could have done more. I'm, you know, probably as guilty as anybody, but people were looking for a fight, and we just tried to communicate as best we could there just wasn't one to be had. Like, I think, you know.
Well, and I noticed that when right after ZenCon, and you dropped the bombshell, especially after the whole framework shootout, and then all of a sudden, you know, you were representing Cake, and now you're not representing Cake, you know. And I've seen projects fork before, and I'm like, okay, you know, it's time to hunker down, because this is just not going to be a happy time in the PHP community. But I was very impressed that, for the most part, you didn't do that. And if you did it, you kept it out of the public eye. And I was very impressed.
Yeah, actually, the ZenCon thing was kind of hilarious, because you had people on the one hand who were saying, oh, you know, now that this has come out, he's probably just going to use the shit out as a platform to bash Cake, and I did pretty well. And the funniest part, though, was how just completely amicable everyone was. I could see Andy out of the corner of my eye in the front row, kind of like, you know, smirking and expecting a fight. And yeah, I threw a few jabs in there, but, you know, out of humor more than, you know, any technical difference.
Yeah, from an audience perspective, it was very nice and very friendly. You know, I can imagine from a conference organizer's perspective, you know, they wasted all that money on boxing gloves, and you guys didn't glove up.
Well, we did have the Nerf guns. Yeah. So that was something.
Yeah, but that only freaked out the audio engineer, so.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Look, guys, I think the tone was set when you guys were holding hands for the first 10 minutes of it.
That's
what were you thinking?
You know, that Ed Finkler, he's a really attractive guy.
Yeah, he's known to be very friendly.
I was expecting dead silence after that one, so Keith, I'm impressed that you responded.
Yeah.
It takes more than Finkler to shock us, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Wasn't he our guest a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
I actually, I think we're sort of coming to an end here, but I'd like to actually come clean on one thing. I'm with a project that forked a while back, and we were very amicable, well, not entirely amicable public, not entirely amicable, very publicly amicable and everything like that. And we really made a point of not throwing those jabs back and forth until just recently, in fact, because we had a standing agreement of any security vulnerabilities would be, you know, traded back and forth because it affects both of us.
Right.
And that didn't go so smoothly. So the gloves have sort of come off.
Yeah.
But granted, that took like 2 years. So
not bad.
I don't see how it is a good thing, to be honest with you. It just doesn't work out. So, if any listeners, if you're considering working an open source project, consider doing it peacefully, please. Though if you use GitHub, you can fork it without really forking it. So, kind of a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, forking is a very dangerous thing to do if you don't do it right. It can just create a really horrible vibe that just kills communities.
That's true.
Well, and it splits everybody's attention. And depending on how it goes, is a lot of people could look at it and say, okay, well, which one is the viable community? Oh, the answer is neither of them. And then things don't go well.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's all I've got this time around. Cal, did you have anything?
No, Nate, you covered all my questions. I appreciate you being with us tonight and talking with us for a little bit about open source projects and your experience with it. We look for great things coming out of Lithium, and we'll see you online.
All right. Thanks, Cal. Thanks, Keith.
Odd Week Podcast is a production of Blue Parabola. It is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative 3.0 license. This means you can share it all you like, but please don't fold, spindle, or mutilate. Keith Casey can be found wandering the intertube around the Washington, D.C. area on any given day. If you can't find him, you can always check his blog, caseysoftware.com,
Cal Evans, on the other hand, is usually hiding in his secret lair in Nashville, Tennessee. However, you can track his every movement at his blog, blog.calevans.com. Since you love the podcast, and we know you did, why not trade us your email address for our show notes? If you do, after each episode, we'll send you the links we discuss, we'll apologize for the bad humor, and we'll explain any inside jokes. To subscribe to the show notes mailing list, visit phparch.com/podcast. The Odd Week theme music is Iceman by Dr. Blue and is released under a Creative Commons license. A link to the album can be found in the show notes.
You know, that Ed Finkler, he's a really attractive guy.